This is Radioactive, a grassroots environmental and social justice news journal with Meredith DeFrancesco and Amy Brown for February 17th, 2011. Today we follow up with members of the Joint Committee on Regulatory Fairness and Reform as they contemplate what to include in LD1, including the governor's proposed environmental and health rollbacks. And we talk more about the drastic cuts Congress is poised to make to the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, CPB, fundings, which community radio stations like WERU rely on. As listeners know, there was a public hearing on LD1 on Monday in Augusta before the Joint Committee on Regulatory Fairness and Reform, to which an estimated 300 people attended. The bill itself, however, has not yet been written. Released that day was an amendment from the governor's office of his original document. A number of the controversial environmental rollbacks were absent, like the elimination of the bisphenol A ban, the reorganization of the Board of Pesticides Control, the rezoning of 3 million acres of the North Woods for development, among others. These proposals, however, have been said to be moving to other committees for consideration. We have with us today a member of the Joint Committee on Regulatory Fairness and Reform, Representative Sharon Treat from District 79, which is Hollowell, Farmingdale, and West Gardner. We're happy to have you here to explain in more detail the charge and process of the committee and the origins, content, and implications of LD1. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. I'm glad to be on the... LD1 is the bill that we're considering. If you go onto the legislative website, you can look that bill up, and you will see that it is two sentences, and it talks about regulatory fairness and improving the business climate. It's a concept bill, which means it's not actually the language of a bill. And so from LD1, you have no idea what could possibly be in it. After that bill was released and during the time that we had seven different regional hearings, the governor came out with what he called phase one of his regulatory agenda, a six-page listing of essentially environmental laws that he wants to repeal or pretty dramatically weaken. What happened on Monday, which was billed as a public hearing on LD1, is that the governor came in with a 48-page amendment that had specific legislative language for some of his phase one,
okay,
but not all of it.
So that's the document we saw, wasn't the bill, but considered amendment to that couple of sentences.
Right, and I think it's really important for your listeners to understand that things that they and the 300 people that came, and most of which whom came to testify in opposition to parts of the governor's agenda, which would, for example, you know, restrict the use of, repeal the bills on the toxic chemical BPA and Sippy Cup, repeal the KidSafe product law, repeal sulfur dioxide pollution controls, you know, among many other things, the issues you talked about in terms of, you know, zoning 30% of the LURC territory for development, or 3 million acres. That was moved out. Some of that was moved out of this 40-page page amendment, but under questioning, the commissioner of the Department of Environmental Protection was very clear that the governor is not backing away from the rest of those proposals. They may appear again before our committee or separately in legislation in other committees. So those things are still all on the table. They're still being pushed very heavily by the governor, and in fact, he reiterated that on the radio just recently.
And again, so you wouldn't know when those would come. You're not aware yet.
We really have no idea, and I'm, you know, I think that it would be a good question to ask the actual chairs of the committee. I'm a minority member of the committee. We don't really know what the process is. We have a 14-page document that the staff put together that lists the governor's proposals, and then it lists a bunch of bills that are pending in the other committees that seem related to that. Those are just the bills that we already know about. There may be other ones coming. Some of these committees may already have started holding hearings on some of this. Others may not do that. I mean, it's an extremely confused situation, and I think it's been very frustrating for the public because Many people showed up at the regional hearings we had prepared to testify on Phase 1, which very much could be part of LD1 when the committee gets done with it. I mean, I don't plan to vote for that, but it certainly could be something the majority supports. And then the public was told at these meetings, don't speak about this. You should come to Augusta on the 14th of February. That's when you get to speak about the governor's proposals. They came on Monday, and then we're told, oh, well, maybe these won't be before us, so maybe you shouldn't be talking about them now. So it's not a very, you know, citizen-friendly approach to legislating, and it's not really the way I've ever seen a piece of legislation put together before.
And we do hope we will be talking to one of the chairs later in the program. We have a call out, and hopefully the scheduling will allow us to do that. But as you understand the charge of the committee with all these listening sessions around the state, if you have an idea of how those testimonies, which included from people who were, when people were asked to be proponents or opponents, some who were proponents of the bill actually weren't advocating for environmental rollbacks, but say had other sort of nuts and bolts ideas. How are those ideas potentially going to be integrated into a bill?
Well, again, it remains to be seen. My hope is that we as a committee can really focus on the things that are what I call kind of the hassle factor of regulatory, you know, dealing with rules and regulations and permits, the difficulty that often exists, especially for very small businesses and nonprofits, from figuring out which rules apply to you, which departments to go to, sometimes the lack of coordination where you have several departments with different permits relating to different things. You know, let's say you had a restaurant, you've got one department deals with the rules about employee pay, and another department deals with the size of the sink that you have to be, you know, appropriately clean and healthy. And this can be a hassle for companies. And if there are ways that we can make these rules and procedures easier for small businesses, if we can help lead them through the process, if we can get rid of duplication and unnecessary paperwork, that's where I personally would like to go, and I think that the Democratic members of our committee also want to do that. And my hope is that we can set aside what to me is a very reckless repeal of environmental laws and say that's not where we're going, that's not going to be helpful to business, that's not what the people of Maine want, and really focus on the charge to the committee, which was to focus on the red tape.
But here we have now this now 48-page document, which is an amendment for your committee to consider. Can we talk about some of those issues, or I'll run down what I understood when I looked down. We're looking at the rollback of waste disposal rules to federal standards. We are going to see the Secretary of State having unilateral authority to temporarily halt any regulation deemed undue burden on business. The abolition of the Board of Environmental Protections, the Citizen Board, and replaced that with a Board of Environmental Appeals. There's a requirement for a jobs impact analysis for every proposed rule or law that becomes before the legislature, as I'm understanding reading this. You can correct me. Eliminate the Informed Growth Act. I have questions about what the permit timeframes might be, air and water discharge language, and then this idea, or this, it's put right forth right here, that all departmental rules be predicated on sound science and clarity of language, quote unquote, and some questions about how we will be defining sound science. Can you comment on any of these aspects?
Well, I guess I would say that as I read it, it's a bunch of lawyers, and I am one, writing about what science should be. And I think that a lot of this looks like it was very hastily put together. It's very poorly drafted. It takes people out of the process by getting rid of the Board of Environmental Protection and sending everything to the courts. The Secretary of State proposal actually came from the Secretary of State. I'm not sure that the governor is on board with that, but we had questions about the constitutionality of the Secretary of State intervening in the executive branch. Secretary of State is elected by the legislature. And in addition, right now, if you wanted to go and stop a regulation, you would have to go to court and prove to the court that there was irreparable harm to your business, and also that there wouldn't be irreparable harm to, say, a kid that might be potentially poisoned by something that, you know, let's say an agency came out with an emergency rule to prevent the sale of something that was poisoning children. That was a hypothetical I gave to the Secretary of State, and there were no criteria in his proposal. I mean, he would have sort of absolute authority to just say, well, we don't like this rule, it's a burden on business, which it probably would be a burden on business because they wouldn't be able to sell a product that they had. That's not a very high bar to meet. So there's a lot of things in here, and I think the bottom line is, and some of them are procedural, and they you know, it helps to be a lawyer to understand them, mm-hmm. but I do think the bottom line is that it is about sippy cups versus, you know, actually focusing on regulatory reform and jobs. And these rules would roll back and make it harder to ever pass legislation in the future that could take a reasoned scientific approach to reducing exposure to toxics, for example, like the KidSafe product law, which is based on science. We wouldn't actually be able to do that in the future based on their definition of science, based on their language, which prefers going back to the federal standard. We don't even have a federal standard for many of these things that Maine does, so that doesn't really help you, you know, get anywhere. I think there's so much interest in helping to create jobs in the state among the members of my party and the other party as well. I don't see any of this creating jobs. I really don't. I was very lucky to be a participant in a legislative tour around the state of Maine, looking at research and development projects going on across the state at the University of Maine, you know, turning wood into jet fuel and turning wood into bridge material that's stronger than steel. This is the kind of stuff that is creating jobs in our state that is going to move us into a new economy. And what we're getting from the governor is really just trashing the environment, and that's not going to help the economy. It's going to be destructive to tourism. It's going to give Maine a bad reputation in terms of being an ugly and polluted place to go. It's going to hurt our shellfish industry. It's going to hurt forestry industry. It's you know, I just don't see the sense of it, and it just seems inconsistent with the stated goals of this legislation.
And where do you see, as you understand, again, we're seeing that the process seems a little hard to decipher at this point, but where does the process go from here? There'll be working sessions, and what will it be that working sessions be looking at, specifically at this 48-page proposal by the governor, or what LD1 are you considering?
Well, I've taken almost 50 pages of handwritten notes on these 8 different hearings. And, you know, a lot of it was people objecting to phase one, but there were nuggets of ideas in there that related to an ombudsman, for example, or that related to combined permitting or reviewing some environmental standards that seemed to overlap and be inconsistent with other ones. Those are the things I'd like to see. I think other Democrats would like to focus on those. Our hope is that we can get the whole committee to have the same focus. If the whole committee does not, and the majority of the committee, which the majority party is the Republican Party right now, if they want to go down the road of these environmental changes, they will put together a bill that does that. We will not be doing that. We would have what is called a minority report, which is outlines the things that we want to do, and I think we will hew pretty carefully to the suggestions that came out of these meetings that will make the permitting process work better for businesses and for the public, both, at the same time not rolling back the really positive environmental laws that we have right now.
And finally, do you know whether there'll be another public hearing when there's actual language that people are knowledgeable of beforehand?
Well, again, I don't control the committee process, and it's going to be up to the leadership of the legislature and our chairs, but that is certainly something that should happen. You should not have hearings on bills that haven't been written yet. Hearings should be on bills that are written so that people can come in and testify about actual language. So I certainly will be advocating for that, but I'm in the minority. I don't control the process, and I'm certainly hopeful that those that do we'll make sure that the public are heard and have an appropriate opportunity to actually read what the legislation is.
Well, that's the time that we have for today. Representative Sharon Treat from District 79, from the Joint Committee on Regulatory Fairness and Reform. We certainly will be following this issue on WERU and hopefully can speak with you again. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
This is Radioactive on WERU. We are discussing the work of the Joint Committee on Regulatory Fairness and Reform, an LD1 that could include numerous reorganizations or rollbacks of a number of environmental and health processes and protections. During or after this program, we would encourage you to call in and support local public affairs on WERU at 1-800-643-6273. We now go to an interview with the co-chair of the Committee on Regulatory Reform, Representative Jonathan McCain. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Earlier, we spoke with another member of your commission, and we wanted to get some of the nuts and bolts of where the process goes from here from one of the chairs, and so we're glad to have you on. Can you talk with us about what the charge of the committee is from here, what sort of bill your committee will be looking to make and where those components will be coming from? For instance, how much will you be integrating from the listening sessions and how much from this 48-page document? How are you looking to your work and how are you thinking LD1 will come about?
Well, our first meeting is on the 24th. That's our first work session after the eight hearings that we had, seven of them off-site, and then the last one on Monday in Augusta. We are going to start the process of sifting through all of the information. We have all of the suggestions, and not including the governor's proposal, we have hundreds. And the Office of Policy and Legal Analysis is going through those and trying to categorize them. And from there, we will be going through them one at a time and determining if we want to keep them in our committee, if we think they should be sent on to a policy committee, if there is something that we can address through statutory language, and then there will probably be some that we will just set aside to think about later. But we have a huge amount of work. And the first part of it is simply organizational.
And after there is language, will you hold another public hearing?
Yes, yes. Okay. We will be having at least one more public hearing.
That was definitely one of the questions that I wanted to answer for our listeners. Another thing that was being discussed at the hearing was that there had been components of the governor's proposals that had been pushed on to other committees. Is that true, or are some of those components that weren't in the 48-page amendment still going to be considered by your committee?
Well, first let me say about the hearings, I'm 99% sure that we will have probably at least one more hearing. And now back to your other question. There are some of the proposals that were set forth originally by the governor were actually or had been submitted by legislators. So those we will just let go, and they will go to the policy committees.
What do you mean, sorry, that they had been submitted by legislators already?
Let's see.
Or if you have specific examples.
Several bills that had already been submitted concerning vernal pools. There were probably several pools with shoreland zoning. I know there was at least one on the Informed Growth Act, which I think we will, you know, we're going to keep that in our committee, I think. But those kinds of things, the governor had sent in his proposals, but legislators have been busy submitting legislation for the past month. Or 2 months, and some of those are duplicative, and we will just let them go to the policy committee that they were directed to.
What about this bisphenol A ban?
I don't think there's anything submitted on that. I don't know anything more about it than what we got from that was in the governor's original proposal, and it's not in the recent one.
And is it potentially something that your committee could take up, or is...
I don't think our committee would take it up if it did come forward. I really don't. I think that's a very intricate issue that's going to require some testimony from scientists and people who really know the issue. I would be a little bit surprised if it did come up again.
So again, just to be specific about the process, you'll be looking at all these different aspects that were brought before you at the listening sessions, including the governor's proposal. How is that process going to take place?
Well, again, on we start on the 24th, and the OPLA analyst will have hopefully have things pretty well separated into the different different issues of different policy directions. You know, whether it's environmental or whether it's labor, or whether it's taxation, whether it's something that's to do with just the government itself. And then, depending on how big or how complex the issue is, we will decide then, and over the next couple of work sessions, to either keep them in our committee, combine them with something else, or to send them on to the policy committee.
In attending the public hearing, it seemed a bit disjointed, or that it wasn't completely clear whether this was a public hearing or a continuation of a listening session. Were you indeed taking suggestions that were happening there just to integrate in like a listening session?
We were still taking suggestions, and we will continue to do that. I would hate to cut it off where there mm-hmm. are so many good suggestions still out there. A lot of people really didn't have a chance to come forward, even though we did go around the state. They're very busy. And also, after the governor's proposal came out, the committee hearings did get rather crowded. And we know that there were some people that just didn't really get a chance to step forward that had suggestions on our regulatory environment.
And can you talk about what's become a real flashpoint for the work of the committee? Is when the governor's proposals came out, they were, bar none, about environmental current laws or environmental organizations. And in attending some of the listening sessions around the state, it seemed to me that a lot of the suggestions that were coming from people who did, in fact, have suggestions about how processes could be made more expedient for small business. The people that were saying that weren't necessarily talking about rolling back environmental protections. In your position, how do you feel like you are reconciling this? Are you feeling the pressure to look at it through the lens of the governor's proposal, or do you feel that's perhaps a false dichotomy considering the messages you were getting from the listening sessions?
Well, that's kind of a long question. But
yes, I apologize.
No problem. We heard a few suggestions about repeals of certain what would be considered environmental bills. But mostly what we were getting is not so much about the environmental laws themselves, taking the governor's proposals out of this. But the people who came forward were not as concerned with the laws themselves as the way they were administered and enforced.
Mm-hmm.
There was the theme that we heard several times. It kind of went across through all of the hearings that state government just didn't have the same sense of urgency. And what we heard about were issues dealing with the Department of Environmental Protection, not so much the actual laws, although there were a few suggestions about how to change some of the laws, in particular vernal pools. We heard a lot about the vernal pool setbacks. But it was more about how slow and difficult it can be to get a permit. And also, we heard about the fire marshal's office quite a bit, too, some of the regulations with the fire marshal's office and how long it took to actually get the permit to go ahead on a proposal. Let's see, what else? Well, those were, those are just a couple. That's the kind of thing we were hearing.
And what is your position, or do you think that the commission will be taking up a position on equalizing federal and state regulations? And
you mean rolling back?
Yes, rolling back state laws so they are not stronger than the federal regulations. And then also, if you could also speak to whether you'll be taking up this elimination of the Board of Environmental Protection.
That is on the governor's second
yes,
proposal.
It is. Yep.
And we haven't decided, and that's something we will decide on the 24th on our first meeting. As far as rolling back environmental regulations to much lower federal standards, I don't think you're going to see that happening. Those kinds of things would probably go to the Environment and Natural Resources Committee. But I think the problem is when they are duplicative, when they are redundant, when our regulations essentially mirror the federal regulations, and a business has to fill out two sets of forms that basically say the same thing, maybe we would eliminate ours and just let them do one. But as far as rolling back to a much lower level, I don't think that kind of thing is going to be happening through our committee. Again, there probably is legislation concerning some of those environmental issues that will come forward. It may come from the governor's office, but I think you'll see some that's actually coming from legislators that might want to do that, and I can't speak for that.
Mm-hmm. You did say that the abolition of the Board of Environmental Protection is essentially could still be on the table.
Yes. Yep. Well, not. It wasn't a. It was just a change in the structure of the Board of Environmental Protection, and we might look at it as to changing their function. They can be very slow. We heard some complaints about just how long it took for issues to get through the board.
And what about changes to permitting timeframes?
We would love to speed up permitting timeframes. I think we can do that without putting the environment at risk.
We will be following this issue, so I do hope that I can talk with you again as it becomes clearer what is on the table here. Anything else you'd like to add about what you see the charge of the commission is and the public's participation in that process?
What our committee wants to do is listen to the business community and to the people of the state of Maine and get suggestions on how we can make Maine an easier place to do business so that we can create more jobs, so that we can retain more jobs, so that we can keep more young people in our state. And I think that's what we're doing. We're in the process of doing that, and I believe we can do that without sacrificing our environment in any way.
And if people still want to give input to the committee, can they do that in writing?
Oh, by all means.
And how would they do that?
They can email, let's see, you can go online, maine.gov/legis, and look it up. You could address it to the Senate Chair, Jonathan Courtney, and myself, Jonathan McCain, the House Chair.
Thanks for joining us, and I do hope that we will be able to talk with you in the future as this LD1 unfolds.
Oh, I look forward to it.
Thank you.
That's all right. Thank you very much.
Six bills have been introduced in Congress to eliminate funding for public broadcasting: H.R. 68, H.R. 69, H.R. 235, H.R. 408, and S. 178. An even greater threat, however, is the elimination of funding in congressional appropriations for the remainder of fiscal year 2011. This vote is likely to occur in the next day or so. We spoke with Ginny Burson, Vice President and Director of the Federation Services for the National Federation of Community Broadcasters, about what these drastic cuts to the Corporation for Public Broadcasting would mean for rural communities like WERU.
On the national scene, the stations that are going to be the most hurt are going to be the rural stations, the stations on Indian reservations, the Latino stations, and the African-American stations. So the stations in the big cities are going to be hurt, but they are not generally as dependent on CPB funding as these other stations. And the reason is, in a rural area, as your listeners no doubt know, you don't have the same population base. And the kinds of things that work in big cities where there's a big population base and there's a fairly good size of highly educated people with a lot of disposable income. Of course, there are highly educated people with disposable income in rural areas, but not as many. And that's the typical public radio audience. And so you're looking at, in rural areas, more people with less money, more people with fewer resources, with a smaller disposable income, and fewer businesses who can underwrite, and fewer grant opportunities, And consequently, it is almost 100% across the board that rural stations are much more dependent on their federal funding than urban stations. So what's going to happen is that if funding goes away, is first of all, a lot of people are going to lose their jobs, and that's not going to help the unemployment situation. But more than that is what is going to happen. Stations are going to, most of the stations will stay on the air, but with such a greatly reduced level of public service that it's really going to seriously weaken the ability of stations to do what they're best at doing, which is providing quality local programming to their communities.
More information can be found at WERU.org or 170millionamericans.org. You can listen to the rest of this interview on WERU's local news report on Tuesday at 4. You've been listening to Radioactive, a grassroots environmental and social justice news journal with Meredith DeFrancesco and Amy Brown.